Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here today to talk about financial literacy and estate planning. This is our fourth in a series of five sessions on financial literacy, being that it's April and Financial Literacy Month. And we're fortunate enough to have two people with the same last name. Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner with Schaefer Financial, correct?
Correct.
And Megan Schaefer. And Megan is an attorney. Megan is with Pasternak and Fittus, correct?
Correct.
And specializes in estate?
I specialize in estate planning and estate administration, and I deal with a wide variety of clients. Everyone from young individuals to complicated couples and very complicated families.
Okay, so the listening audience is a vast array of people as well at every age level. And interesting, too, with federal government, there isn't a job description that isn't covered in the federal government. So a cornerstone of financial literacy, regardless of age, is a sound, well-constructed financial plan. And an important part of a solid, well-constructed estate plan. So they do go hand in hand. Although I'm a tax type, I understand I have to defer to the financial and the legal side. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to do this morning. So, Karen, sound financial plan? Let's not say of any age, of general.
Well, generally speaking, we like to say that the financial plan sits on top of the insurance risk management side and the estate plan, so that if you get that done, it kind of stays done. And then we pay more day-to-day, month-to-month, ongoing attention to sort of goals, balance sheet, cash flow, and investments. But it's almost a waste of time if you get your financial planning house in order if you don't have a good estate plan. The nightmare, the headache, the gut-wrenching stuff that can happen if we don't have the estate plan in order makes all the brilliant financial planning kind of a waste of time.
Very good. A couple of weeks ago, we had Ray Kirk on. Ray is a former OPM. I'd say. Ray is just a wonderful person, calm. But we talked about this, and we came up with this kind of interesting comparison that if one goes on a trip and they're going to drive, they fill up their car with gas. All right? If one's going to go into retirement, it's not gas. It's finance. It's legal. Mm-hmm. It's tax. It's all the above. The more weight you put on that car, in other words, the more expenses you have, really, when you look at, I would say, financial and or legal planning, it's what are your expenses? And everybody looks at what's my income? Well, your expenses are going to drive your need for income. And until you define the expenses, and if you want to go fast and spend a lot more, then you're going to have more gas. Now, I know that sounds kind of corny.
Yeah, but it works. And that it's so true. People always ask me, Karen, can I afford to retire? Well, how much money do you need? Well, you're the financial planner. You tell me. And I said, oh, no. Remember, personal financial planning. Let's work that out. And there's nothing wrong with admitting, I'd really like to live big. I know I can live on less, but it'd be a little more fun if I was living on more. So let's make that part of the plan. If you wait till the last minute, we don't have a lot of options. But if I want to not worry about money and have a comfortable standard of living, I like this standard of living better than my student days, then I can make it all work.
If you're working with somebody, if you will, closer to retirement, and you know that there isn't enough gas in the tank, how do you approach it with cutting? They got to cut expenses or they have to work longer.
Right. You know, it's one of those things. I got quoted in the Wall Street Journal once, when do financial planners consult financial planners? And Rick and I, my husband Rick and I, both certified financial planners, went to a colleague when we were going from a need to a want. We were going from a very comfortable, modest home to a money pit. And we asked, there's no other way to describe this. And so we asked this financial planner, are we being crazy? And he put us through our paces and he said, no, go forth and spur the economy. Go ahead and because you have the college money tucked away, you've got good disability plans, all the good financial planning stuff. But he said, you know what you gave up? And I said, I tried to figure that out. How can anybody know what I gave up? And he said, you can't retire in your 50s. And he was right. If we had stayed in the modest house, there would have been a way that we could have pulled that off. Well, we were giving up something that we didn't care about. We didn't really care. We like our work. So, okay, I can't retire in my 50s. A federal government employee making that same decision may not have noticed they can't retire in their 50s because they took on the extra expenses of a higher standard of living. So what, you know, it's nice to know I've just extended my work life a little bit. If you don't know that and you've hit retirement, then I like to give you some, well, how about we just work a little bit part-time? How about we take the edge off? I love this phased retirement that's coming up. If we can get more people understanding this is probably a good idea for so many reasons, you can have that higher standard of living, you can kind of have both. Or we can just back it up to say, you know what, you can't have this and that. What's a higher priority? Maybe we'll just rent that one every once in a while and still feel like we're getting the advantage of the more expensive standard of living.
Okay. At the early stages of one's career, Megan, I know you're an estate planner, but I would think in a younger person's mind, that's the last thing they're thinking about. Estate planning is 30, 40 years away, and now, you know, I'll be fine.
Absolutely. Hopefully.
How do you get to that person early on?
So estate planning really focuses on three areas. Incapacity planning. It focuses on planning for the disposition of assets when a person passes away. And that's an area that a lot of young people think, that doesn't even have to be on my radar screen yet. And the other area is tax planning, which also, again, young people think, I have no money, I've got nothing but student debt. And in reality, if someone hasn't hit their stride in their career yet, there probably isn't going to be much tax planning considerations from an estate and inheritance tax side that they need to be concerned about. Where the issues do arise for people who are younger is their families. They need to provide for their families. So if there's a young couple and they've just had their first child, if something happens to mom and dad, who's going to take care of the baby? So younger couples do need to have that on their radar screen to be able to protect their children and say, who will take care of the child? What's going to happen if we have all this money? We don't want money going outright to someone who's 18 years old or young. They won't know what to do with it. They will definitely need a financial planner to walk them through the process. But another issue that younger people really need to consider is incapacity, but not only their own incapacity and what will happen if, you know, the bus comes tomorrow and they're still alive, but they can't make their own financial decisions anymore. They can't make their own medical decisions. Who's going to step in? So that's one area where they need to look at themselves, but they also need to be looking at their parents, because when parents don't have a good estate plan in place, the burden of that then falls on their children. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure mom and dad have documents in place that say who's going to be in charge when they can't make decisions for themselves anymore. And I don't want to wait until the bad event happens. I don't want to wait until mom starts losing her faculties a little bit. I don't want to wait for the heart attack, for the stroke, because then it's too late to put the documents in order. So it's really reaching out of the younger generation really needs to be reaching out to the older generation and saying, do you have a will? Do you have a financial power of attorney? Do you have a medical directive? Mom, what's going to happen if something happens to you? Will I be able to make decisions for you? Will I be able to help you? What's going to happen if something happens to you and dad? So children need to be aware of their abilities and the limitations of how they will be able to step in as needed. It's going to be a lot harder. No one wants to have to step in for their parents, but it'll be a lot harder to do so if the documents aren't in place.
Can I take you off on a really good tangent, at least I think?
Please.
When these folks are looking to help mom and dad, mm-hmm. or in the back of their mind, are they saying, why don't I get my house in order now because it's going to be less painful? Dealing with mom and dad, whatever age, let's say they have all their faculties about them. This is mine. This is none of their business. But they should have thought about that a while ago, and they don't.
Right.
And then if there's more than one child, which generally that's the case,
right,
then you have that dynamic.
Yep.
And I deal not in your world, but in the tax world. Mom gives the house away to one of the kids, and then the house gets sold, and then it shows up on the tax return, and just it's bad news tax-wise. And then, well, mom really liked me better than you, so I should get a bigger percentage. And I don't know how you deal with that, but that's a Ouija board of egos. And
it is. And every family is different. But it's always easier to sit down when everyone's healthy and everyone's able to think through what decisions they want to have made and not have to have the state or the court step in and say, this is what we're going to do here. This is where the money's going to go, and this is who's going to be in charge. I personally would rather make those decisions myself. So I can make those decisions for myself now. I can't do that if I don't have the documents in place and the bus comes along and either takes me out altogether or leaves me in a hospital bed. So making those decisions now means that I can decide I want all of my money to go here, here, and here. Or I want my sister to step in and make my medical and financial decisions for me if something happens to me.
I always say that these decisions are tough enough. Why add trauma to it? You know, a lot of these medical decisions are being made after you've spent the weekend in ICU with your loved one. You're emotionally drained. You are physically at your worst, and you've got a social worker saying, okay, she's ready for discharge, and you got to come up with $8,000 because she's going to rehab, and you don't even know what bank mom uses, much less where the heck we're going to get this $8,000. I'm working with a young man right now. He's lost both his parents in the last couple of years. He's in his early 20s. He lives abroad, and it's just gut-wrenching going through the mail trying to find the clues to the adults who are no longer in the picture. Would have been wonderful if they could have had a little bit more conversation ahead of time to just even to know where the clues are. I get a lot of pushback. Bob, you mentioned where the adult does, it's none of your business. You know, you're the kid, I'm the adult. And they want a little privacy. And I'm always trying to coach those people into, look, you don't have to put it all out there. This is exactly how much money you have. But you do have to have a little pathway that people know A, exists, and B, how to take the steps on it so that if need be, they come in instead of the judge. I mean, what does that really mean if we just have total dysfunction going on and nobody's
sure
agreeing with anything? How does this, who decides?
So it's different in every state, but if there's an adult out there and they can't make their own financial decisions anymore, one of two things can happen. Either a child or someone who cares about them can come forward and say, someone needs to take over here, and they can go through a conservatorship hearing, which a conservator is the person who then sort of takes over and can make the financial decisions. So, but it's a process. It's going to a judge. It's going, there's paperwork involved. If children don't get along within the family, it can be a nightmare.
It
can be a headache. It can be. It's not overwhelmingly expensive, mm-hmm, but it's time consuming.
I had some clients who were kind of muddling along and not really officially in charge of mom. They were helping her a lot. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, they realized they're signing her name on things. So they went to court to be officially appointed, and a professional got put in.
Right.
So it was like $500 a month to take care of a pretty simple situation.
Right.
And so that's up to the judge to decide?
Probably.
Yeah.
So there it's just, it's so much easier to say beforehand, I want my son, I want my daughter, I want this child to step in.
I don't want my son or my daughter.
Exactly. That's also, yeah. If, especially if you have a family where, you know, you've got one brother who's sort of gone off the deep end a little bit. That becomes a huge issue. If siblings don't get along, that becomes a huge issue when it comes to taking care of mom and dad. It can also become a huge issue when, you know, mom and dad pass away and money needs to get distributed out. Families can really turn their ugliest when it comes to who's going to get mom and dad's things. Who's going to get the engagement ring? Who's going to get this bank account? Or how is that all going to be distributed? And if there's one child in the family that really cannot, for whatever reason, whether it's, there's a million reasons, but if they can't financially manage their own money, that's something that needs to be addressed beforehand as well. So
you would say that a young person, certainly with children or any kind of assets, needs to get some estate planning documents of their own?
Absolutely. If someone has young children, please do the world
today
a favor and set up a will and name a guardian and set up a trust so that if something happens to you and everything you own is now going to your children who are still minors, if you don't have documents in place, what will happen is, again, it's a guardian will need to be appointed for your children. So there's a whole court process. Usually family members will have to come forward and figure out who's the best person to take care of these children. If your family doesn't get along, that's going to be a nightmare. But another huge financial issue is minor children cannot receive money outright in their individual name. So what will happen is that money will then go into a specially created, court-created account that fees get taken out of. And some professional is going to be appointed to take care of that. And it adds up.
And it often, you can't invest that money. Often there's just a requirement
Correct.
That it stays in cash, earning 0 point nothing. Well, that's going to be tough if college education costs are going up double inflation, if not more.
Exactly. So if there's a document in place that says, I want everything to go to my children, but I want my sister to be the guardian and to raise my children, and I want all the money to be held in trust for their benefit until they reach a financially responsible age.
Okay, so what is that?
That's a whole other issue.
Sometimes, isn't that
47 or so?
I had to deal with one. I had to watch the money for this one person until they were 40.
Yeah.
There was a reason why, but it could be they just are no good with money or they're just not thinking right.
Mm-hmm.
But could I take this off, not on a total tangent, but, you know, we talked about kids. What about childless couples or somebody who's never going to be a couple?
Absolutely. So single individuals are a lot of times think, I don't take care of anyone. No one's depending on me. I don't have that much money. Who cares? Someone's going to be caring when they're coming to clean up the mess you left behind. So many times, you know, a married couple will think, okay, my wife, my husband, my spouse knows everything I own. People don't know that with a single individual. It's such a broader question then of who is going to step in to make medical, financial decisions. It's a much broader question of who's going to be in charge when that person passes away or is incapacitated.
I think it's the incapacity one that should resonate with any single person.
Absolutely.
You know, it is true. When I'm the dead guy, it's really not my mess anymore. And I don't mean to stick it to somebody else, but I don't have to be as concerned about that. But boy, if I'm the single person and there's no obvious person who's going to step in and take over for me, what used to be a terminal illness is now a chronic illness. What used to be a life-ending accident, it's just astounding how people are living a long time, but during a lot of that, not able to make their own financial and healthcare decisions. So that's what I would think would really get to any single person. Who's going to step in here?
And young single person as well. Yeah. I think it's very easy for the 23-year-old to think, oh, well, if anything happens to me, mom will step in. Mom always takes care of me. That's not necessarily true. That's not automatically true. Mom mm-hmm. may or may not be able to go to that doctor and say, this is what my child wants. This is if the child is now legally an adult.
Yeah, you can't even get information.
You can't get information. There needs to be a document there that says, doctors, talk to my mom.
Okay, let me go a step further. I think all of us in this room, and I bet a lot of people outside of this room, somebody will come in with this will. It was once on white paper. It's now yellow. Mm-hmm. You have to be careful with how you pull it out of the nice little packet that says will, and because it's going to break the paper. Mm-hmm. How often should one have a tune-up? Get back to that goofy car example. Because laws change, things change,
sure.
Friends change,
sure.
Relatives, favorite relatives change.
I had clients once who came in and they said they had a will in place, and I asked them to bring me the copy of it so I could look at over what they had. And they show up and they hand me a cocktail napkin from an airline from the 1970s. And they said, you know, we were on a flight and we hit some turbulence, and so we scribbled some things down on a cocktail napkin. And I thought, this isn't going to cut it. So, but generally, if people already have documents in place, they should make sure they're not on cocktail napkins. But they also, anytime someone has changed states in this, you know, people are moving for jobs all the time. And so if you've crossed a state border or a country's border, absolutely have someone in your new state look at those documents and modify it to current laws. If someone has had a significant increase or decrease in their financial situation, that likely will mean for a modification of their estate plan. Birth of a child, death of a family member, when children get to be different stages, generally every 3 to 5 years, there's been some legal change or some change in a family dynamic that requires a review of the documents. That won't always mean the documents need to be changed, but it should be on the radar screen. Divorce is a huge one. Mm-hmm. And not only checking your will and your medical directive and your power of attorney, but checking your beneficiary designations. Is the ex-spouse still named as the beneficiary of your life insurance?
I bet OPM has lots of those examples.
This is an interesting example with regards to the thrift. The inheritance of the thrift, married couple, spouse can leave the money in the thrift, but if the spouse passes with the money in the thrift, the kids pay taxes on it. There's no stretch. Goes to an IRA. Not again, everybody's married. But let's say your example, this actually came from a client after hearing about this first thing, and they said, my spouse and I are going to Hawaii. What happens if there's a plane crash? Who's the first one to die?
Yeah.
And the thrift actually has a way to say, well, I'm not going to say what it is, but it was effectively whichever one works best.
Yeah.
That's a non-technical answer. But let's remind the folks what we're talking about. We are talking about financial literacy, and financial literacy isn't just finances, and it is just isn't legal, but they certainly go hand in hand. And I would imagine both of you in your professional practices send out newsletters. Some read, some don't. Mm-hmm. But at least you're telling them, gee, they changed mm-hmm. the law in Maryland. Maybe it looks like that's going to change the estate mm-hmm. exemption. But people don't know that, and people might move out of the state of Maryland because it was so awful before.
Right.
Not just to talk about Maryland. I'm sure there's 49 other states that have issues.
Well, we were just talking about estate taxes. Don't take it too personally, Maryland. Yeah. But what I get sometimes when I'm trying to motivate people to, come on, let's get this done. This is what the rest of your financial plan is sitting on. I get some pushback on fees. You know, do I really have to go pay somebody to do this? Isn't there something on the internet? It's not a cocktail napkin from the plane. There's got to be something that I can do that's kind of fill in the blank. It was my experience that getting it done by somebody who knows how to do documents and does nothing but documents, even though I personally may have pulled out the documents and reviewed them every 3 to 5 years, I really didn't have to tweak them because they were so thoughtfully crafted that even though estate tax limits went from $600,000 at a federal level to $5 million, $10 million for married couples, my documents are still fine regarding tax planning. So I don't know sometimes how to answer that. What about these fill in the blanks? Or
sure. It is an area where you get what you pay for. And okay. One of the hardest things, I think the hardest area of estate planning for people when they're thinking about getting their documents together, it's all the hard decision making. It's thinking about the uncomfortable questions that you don't want to think about. It's thinking about death. Who wants to deal with that? So whether or not you're filling in a online fill-in-the-blank document or if you're going to a professional, you're going to have to think through the hard questions. So if you're getting that far, then it becomes a question of you get what you pay for. So I'll give this example. When I was first starting out, I thought, why should people pay me for this when they can pay? I won't call out any companies in particular, but why they can just go on the internet and print something out. So I went online and I got a document and I printed it out. And there was one, I'll give this one as an example. There was one magic phrase that was missing: that probate shall be unsupervised. And in the state in question, a supervised probate, I wouldn't wish it on anyone in my family, certainly. It's a nightmare. It means that there is paperwork upon paperwork. It means that there's a court sort of looking over someone's shoulder the entire time, tracking where every penny is going. It's unnecessary. If I trust the person I'm naming in my document, I don't need them to check in with a judge every 6 to 9 months. That's why I'm naming them in the first place. I trust them.
That's an excellent point, because I get comments in the class now, and I'm a tax type, and they go, well, I use a commercial-aided software product, and that's fine, but sometimes you can't do all the states. But in your world, they say, well, I'm going to set up an LLC and I can just do it off the web, or I can do this or that. And I say, yeah, you can. But if you miss a paragraph, if you miss a sentence, and it opens up the door for you to be sued, you wish you spent the money with the attorney. This is not a paid endorsement, by the way, folks.
but it is. It's just it's financial literacy. And I think a responsibility that we all have is to know what we don't know. And that's what kind of I have to know. That there's only so much that I can understand about taxes. And if I have something more than a very straightforward situation, I'm either going to have to learn it or I'm going to have to delegate that to somebody who and hold them to a professional standard to get it right. And it's the same thing with all financial planning. I spend a lot of time teaching people how to do their own financial planning. But I always say, at some point, you can't do this yourself. As we age, our response time from a situation to a solution or a good decision will slow, just like our response time from the gas pedal to the, back to your analogy there, gas pedal to brake pedal. It's going to slow. And as I start to get just a little fuzzy or a little less sure of my decision making, this is well before dementia, somebody should know me well enough to know, yeah, Karen might not have done it that way. Somebody should really be able to suggest, let me take this burden and assure you it's going to get done right. So it could be my child. I could have had my child in training, or it could be a professional at that point. But I've just we could do a whole show, Bob, on the horror stories of people not delegating to a professional when they needed to, and the sad consequences that we sometimes can't recover from.
We'll have to do it with Bob Bronstein because he does this show, and it's like Tales from the Crypt, but it all deals with federal benefits, and it's just way out in the weeds stuff, and it's good show. Anyway, let's remind the folks what we're doing. I think it's pretty clear. It's Financial Literacy Month. It's pretty clear we're talking about financial literacy that involves estate planning, and we're talking with Karen Schaefer, Certified Financial Planner with Schaefer Financial, and Megan Schaefer, Attorney at Law with Pasternak and Fittus. Now it's time, I think, for you all to give your contact points out. Karen?
I'm in Rockville, and Rockville, Maryland, suburban Washington, D.C., and Schaefer is spelled with every letter you can put in it. So you can always find me, Karen, at Schaefer Financial, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, financial, just run that all together, .com. Send me a little email. We're always happy to hear from people.
Okay, Megan?
So I'm at Pasternak and Fittus in Bethesda, Maryland, and you can find me at M. Schaefer, spells the way she does it, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, at Pasternak, Fittus, all one word, .com.
Sometimes it's easier just to Google those Schaefer Financial or Schaefer Professionals. It does pop up pretty easily.
Now, how do you deal with folks that need life insurance, but they think $100,000 is just fine? Now, it may be when they just started work, it may be fine, but after a while, you have to get back to the gas in the tank. And if there isn't enough gas in the tank, this would add to it.
Well, sometimes, you know, everybody, again, we're talking about one of those topics nobody wants to think about, and let's spend some more money, right? You can't buy life insurance for free. So I usually approach it two ways and just say, let's just look at what these numbers are telling us. If I died and took my income with me, who suffers? As a young single woman? No, not so much. Financially, who suffers financially? And now, as a 60-year-old woman with financially independent children, I'd like to think they'd miss me, but they get my stuff, right? So not so much financial heartache anymore. But in those years, I needed more life insurance than I wanted to talk about in those years where I was responsible to other people. And you can actually show somebody the numbers and said, if you took this, if you really died and took your income with you, it's a matter of months before somebody's struggling with the mortgage payment, or now we have kids who lost their parents tragically young. That's one more excuse not to go to college if there's no money. So we can actually back into it, do some broad brush. Oh, no, $100,000, we'd rip through that pretty quickly. But then the good news about life insurance for reasonably healthy non-smokers, don't have to be brilliantly healthy, but reasonably healthy non-smokers at almost any age, it's pretty affordable because reasonably healthy non-smokers really don't have much chance of dying anytime soon. I mean, it's a little greater than 0%. But so you can usually, so even though I'm saying I think your family might need $500,000, $1 million worth of life insurance, if you're at child rearing age, we can actually put that in place for money that you wouldn't even hardly notice. It's the big states. It's the real complicated things where we have to get a little more sophisticated, and maybe this inexpensive term life insurance isn't going to work. But for the vast majority of federal government employees, that's all they need. Get some term insurance in place while there's a financial need. And like any insurance, be glad you don't file a claim and you can drop it.
Years ago, I'm sure you remember this, we did a session in a very large conference. It was probably about 10 years ago, and we reversed it. We called Get Real About Retirement Dollars, and we started out with the expenses.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. We had this kind of, you know, it's easy to follow stuff, a nice color, and then the next question is, where is the money coming from? Yeah. And then we compared the two, and we said, if you're in the red zone, that doesn't mean you're close. That means you're far away. You're spending more than what you're going to get in retirement. Yeah. And how do you get out of the red zone? And we spent a fair amount of time on investment options or cutting expenses, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody can't cut expenses.
Right.
So I think that of all the shows we've done, the financial literacy really has got to focus in on what you do with your money and how much you've accumulated if you're going to leave, like you say, people behind that would need the money.
Mm-hmm.
Not to bang on life insurance. I don't sell life insurance, never have, never will. But I just remember a very good friend once saying, and nice family, et cetera. And $1 million is fine. And $1 million, there's no question, is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But at that age and the age of the kids, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a married person with kids. It could be any, you know, if you're going to care for somebody or somebody's dependent on you, that's got to last a long time.
It's got to last a long time. And you also really have to dovetail it with these good documents, because can you imagine somebody dies tragically young, midlife, and now there's this big pot of money, and it goes to somebody who's never handled money, who's in the veil of grief, which is a real thing, horrible time to be making big decisions. So, it, you know, step it up, understand whether you need the life insurance, but then the beneficiary can be a trust with all the people in place that I know right now, when I'm not worried about being sick, I'm not worried about dying tragically young. These are people whose common sense and integrity I respect.
What's a trust?
It's usually a rectangle on a diagram that allows us to do things that we can't do without that rectangle, like maybe manage money or put another person in, separate the ownership from the management and the beneficiary. It's one of those all legal terms.
I think people hear the word trust and think frozen. They hear all the money's going in trust and think, oh, no, it's not. I want to use that money. That's not exactly what's going on there. A trust is more protection. A trust can say, I want all the money to be used for this person or these people, and can be very broad in the flexibility of what that money can be used for. What it offers is a way to manage money for someone who, whether it's financial reasons, whether they're still a minor, whether they're just not good at making financial decisions, whether they're elderly and have become incapacitated. A lot of times there's a tax reason involved as well. But what it means is that someone is managing money on behalf of whoever the beneficiary of the trust is. And many times, you know, I could have a trust where all the money in the trust can be used for me, and I'm named as the trustee. So trust doesn't mean frozen at all. There really is a lot of flexibility there, and it's offered as protection.
I had something last couple of weeks. This guy had a parent die unexpectedly, and the money was in trust, mm-hmm. and it was very hard for him to deal with it because it brought back memories.
Oh.
Of the person that died, and they just wanted to get it done. Now, fortunately, it didn't need to be around for a long time, but they couldn't get it distributed and whatever fast enough. And yeah. I'm not laughing at it, but I had never heard of that before. This is just brings back bad memories.
Oh, sure,
sure. And grieving is certainly a long process, but
personal. You know, people go through that process quite differently, and sometimes it's it gets pushed aside and comes back much later and with bigger surprises. So you just have to know that it's a real thing.
Megan,
yes.
This question's got you all over. The question came in over the phone line. This individual from Silver Spring, which is a local city around here in Maryland, for those of you all outside the Beltway. And here we go. I am one of the younger people listening. I'm 31 years old. I have a mortgage, but I don't have a lot in the way of other assets. Unmarried, no children. When should I be thinking about the disposition of my assets? I have a sister, but other than that, I don't even know who my heirs would be. This is a great question. Now, we didn't make this up, by the way, folks.
Nicely done, Silver Spring.
Yeah.
So if you pass away in Maryland and you don't have a will in place saying where you want all of your property to go, it'll first go to your parents, if your parents are still living. If your parents are not living, it'll go to your brothers and sisters. If you don't have any brothers and sisters living, it goes to their children, and so on and so forth. And it follows out the branches of the family tree.
What if there's no tree? What if they're an only child And does the money just go poof, or does it go to a charity, or does it go to the county?
there's some very distant relative out there, but it does. Eventually, if there truly is no tree to speak of, it will go back to the state.
Okay.
Yeah. So she has a sister, and she's got a mortgage on a house. But I bet if she's a Fed, she's got a thrift savings plan. If she died while in service, there'd be half a year's worth of her salary that's going to get paid. She named some beneficiary designations for those things. Is that enough reason for her to be getting her will done at this point?
It's never too soon to get your will done. Where the primary concern, though, if it were me, would be a medical directive and a financial power of attorney, because younger people, I think, have a greater risk of periods of incapacity at some point during their lifetime. And if you're single, it's not always clear, is it going to be mom and dad who are stepping in to make financial decisions for you? Is it going to be your sister? Who do you want stepping in?
Mm-hmm.
I would put that document, make sure those documents are in place, saying, I want my sister to be making these medical decisions, and I want her to be making these financial decisions, and don't wait for the bad event to be happening.
What I've had some experience with some fairly young clients I had one client who didn't know that she was her dryer wasn't vented correctly, and so she didn't feel well because she was getting some of these noxious fumes, and then it took a year to diagnose it. In the meantime, it made her so lethargic, she wasn't making her mortgage payment, and then once it was diagnosed, she had all of these bad financial ramifications. And if somebody would have been able to step in with a power of attorney and say, look, I got to handle this for you. This is just a mess. She lost her house over this. She ended up with a bunch of credit card debt that she couldn't get out of because nobody had any authority. And here she was, not able to function mentally, and a very unsatisfying diagnosis for a year until they finally figured it out. So that's what, when I heard that question read, Bob, I was really thinking of, wow, it doesn't take much for a 31-year-old homeowner to lose the house if somebody doesn't know to step in.
Could I ask the reverse of this? This is a good question.
Yeah.
What if I am unmarried and later married, or what if I'm married and later get unmarried?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't change my will, and I've named somebody else to handle my affairs, and certainly it isn't the person at the date of death that I want to do it. What happens? Battle royal?
Those are fun days at the office.
It's what keeps me in business. It's not pretty. If you have an ex-spouse named in a position that gives them authority, and you have other family members that are saying, wait a minute, this person has been out of the picture for a long time for good reason. This is not the person who should be in charge here. Those other family members, or those other concerned citizens of the world, will need to step forward and will need to go to court and petition to have that person removed.
All right. Now, we could spend a show on this, and we have on some of the other shows, but it mm-hmm. especially is important to the federal group with their annuity. If there's an ex-spouse, but the ex-spouse was never taken off the form to be the beneficiary of the annuity, the courts, I think, have gone two different ways on this, but the point being is, why have them go anyway? Just
right.
make sure
right.
that...
Yeah, we know who it's supposed to go to, but you have to make that official. I call that a paperwork fire drill. It's just a good little best practice in anybody's financial plan. Every once in a while, when we update financial plans, we do this little paperwork fire drill and say, if the music really was stopping today, do we actually know who the beneficiary would be of my last paycheck? Nobody dies at the end of a pay period. My life insurance, my the the settlement. Megan, you were telling me a story before we went on air about somebody who simple procedure gone wrong dies, and you know, this huge medical settlement, but no estate planning documents in place to handle that appropriately. Young kids, and you know, just who gets all this stuff? What would be the paper? You know, let's do the paperwork fire drill here, and then once we get ours in order and we feel pretty good about that, look at my financial plan all in order, go straight up the family tree, because it's my headache and heartache if my senior generation hadn't done this little paperwork fire drill. And sometimes I have to help them with that so that everything's in order.
Great. So what we've hit the estate planning at a young age, middle age, later age, and then somebody may be looking at this in the mirror saying, ooh, I'm middle age and I'm trying to get this done and this is a lot of trouble. What do I do now to get my house in order? One of the one of the speakers for NITP, not an attorney, but he has this great deal with his son. And if he does certain things, then I don't think this is legally enforceable. One of them is funny. If he hits the trash can in the carport twice, he loses the keys to the car. Yeah. Now, taking keys from a male at any age is going to be tough, but an older age, I think it's really tougher. But at least he had the forethought to do it, and I don't know how far he'd get in front of a judge, but he was thinking about it.
Yeah, right. You know, one of the things that I have found very helpful over the years is just encouraging people to have the conversation. You know, you don't want to be finding out that your dad, who shouldn't be driving anymore, just really killed somebody or hurt somebody or did some horrible damage. And if you can have that conversation with dad about, we don't want to hurt people, and that would be when I might step in and maybe go to your physician and say, can you give me a prescription for dad to lose dad's keys or something? You know, I might be working with social services if you get that form of dementia that's belligerent, but I'm doing it because I respect you and I love you and I don't want your life to end with this kind of heartache that you may have caused somebody. If we're all having that conversation well before dementia or some other illness that's clouding my thinking, then I think the younger generation, the adult child, has way more confidence to come in and say, I know my mom well enough to know she would be mortified if she was hurting people. She would be mortified if she was in that situation. So I'm going to step in and make that decision for her, even if it is still, you know, it's not pleasant to think of some of these choices that aren't good, but I need to get her a caregiver, or I need to get her into an assisted living place, or I need to take the keys away. I have confidence to do that because we had the conversation.
This is a personal experience. My father went into a hospital and never came out. But the doctor came out, and I'm an only child, and my mom and I are there, and he said, you know, it's time to pull the plug. And my mother, we ought to wait a few more days. And I said, Mom, he didn't have a few more days. I went to the doctor and I said, just listen to her. What's another day or two?
Yeah.
And we came to an agreement.
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't very technical.
Right.
But there was no provision anywhere for anybody to make that decision.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think knowing your dad well enough to know and having a good relationship with your mom and being respectful, you got to the right place. So many of these decisions and conversations are being held when you're emotionally drained, physically exhausted, and you really don't know what dad wanted because dad didn't talk about it. Or you really didn't know what Aunt Sophie needs because I'm not her kid, but she didn't have any kids. And I'm sort of playing tag, you're it, make all the decisions. And it's unnecessarily painful. Let's chat.
Yeah. No, we got through it and it was a reasonable response and everybody was in agreement and it was done. But yeah, everybody isn't an only child. You know, so.
Megan, one of the things I wondered about you, when I get this a lot, when should kids be able to get their inheritance? We all know 18 is not the age of reason and 21 may not be the big aha moment, but is 40 ridiculous or what's your experience?
No, absolutely not. And my experience is that people tend to differ. Some people are looking at their children and say, you know, he's not making good choices, or he is hitting the alcohol a little too hard. I actually have a client who put all of his own money in an irrevocable trust because he didn't like his own addictions. Oh, so wow. he didn't
that's
want
enlightened.
So it was. But so that's the same. If a parent's looking at their kid and saying they are really not in control of their own life here, they may choose to put money in trust for them in perpetuity. On the other hand, if people are looking at their kids, usually people think 25, 30, 40 is certainly not unusual. But the other option, if you go to a good estate planner, these are things you can talk out. You'll talk about your whole family, your whole history, the whole dynamics, mm-hmm. and we'll be able to come up with a plan that works best for the people in your family.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like the ones that I hear about where it's staged a bit, you know, give kids an opportunity to inherit a little bit of money.
Absolutely. That's very common where, you know, say they'll get a third of the money at age 25 and then half of whatever's left at age 30 mm-hmm. and then at age 35 get everything that's left.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're coming down for a soft landing. All final right. comments? Megan.
It's really never too soon to start thinking about your estate planning and just making sure everything's in order and keeping it on the radar screen.
Okay, Karen.
And make sure that you understand where it fits into your personal financial plan. If we have a strong estate plan, everything builds nicely onto a wonderful financial plan. So that's where we have to start.
And it's really important to listen to this show next week because it's going to be Stump the Experts. We've done 4 out of 5 shows on specifics. Now it's time for you all to ask us most anything you want, except should I do something? And we're going to be here. But in the interim, if you want to send us an email for FOR, benefit@nitpinc. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.